About a month later, I flew out and met with their whole team. We found that their funnels were making money, but they weren't profitable. I helped them fix their current funnels, and we built a new funnel for the upcoming launch of a supplement called Organifi. Overall, between the day I spent in their office and the time going back and forth through email, I think I spent about a month coaching them through the whole funnel building process for free. At the end of it, they launched their new Organifi funnel, and it absolutely blew up. They were making $20,000 to $30,000 a day, and it totally transformed their business. It was awesome. Last I heard, that funnel has done over $25 million in sales in less than 3 years, and it's not slowing down. I didn't ask Drew for this, but in exchange for my help, he made a video for me, talking about the transformation his business went through and the results we got for them. After I saw that video, I knew I was ready to launch the Inner Circle, because I had proof. I had real results for someone besides myself. We put the video into an online funnel and launched our new coaching program. People saw Drew talking about his transformation, and almost instantly, the program started to grow. We set a cap of only 100 entrepreneurs in my inner circle at any given time, and despite the fact that we charged $25,000 per year to be a member, right now, we have waiting lists of people fighting to get in. The goal with this or any kind of business is not to lead with, "How can I sell my product?" Instead, you want to ask, how can I serve people? How can I prove my stuff works? How can I get results for somebody else? Those results are going to sell your products and services. It doesn't matter if you're selling physical products, digital information, or service programs. Go out there and work for free. Get some results. If what you're doing works, then capture those stories and testimonials. Use them to attract and convert your dream clients. I'm going to tell you exactly how to find that first beta group shortly. Step number 2. Design the vehicle, your new opportunity. The next questions are, where do you find people to serve, and what should you create to teach them? Allow me to walk you through the process I've been using to answer those questions for over a decade. This process gets the results that you can then build an empire on. You're going to deliver a 6-week Opportunity Switch Masterclass. During this masterclass, you are going to teach a small group of people about your new opportunity and how it will give them the end result they desire most. Start by picking a 6-week window when you can deliver your class. After more than a decade of delivering online classes, I found that 6 weeks is the optimum amount of time. Any less than that, and you run the risk of people wanting refunds, especially if the class ends inside a 30-day guarantee window. Any longer than that, and people will start complaining because they feel like it's never going to end. I know we're not selling anything yet, but this beta masterclass will become the core curriculum for the people who will be paying you soon, so it's important to set it up in the same way that others will experience it in the future. The next step is to begin building some of the marketing materials for the class. I know that seems backward. Most people design the class first and then think about marketing, but that is a formula for disaster. Just bear with me and you'll soon understand why I do it this way. Who/what statement. As a first step, I like to make a who/what statement that quickly addresses which submarket my message is for, and what new opportunity they will be switching to. It reads like this. I am going to teach this submarket how to your niche. Here are two examples of what that statement could look like. I am going to teach real estate investors how to make money flipping houses on eBay. I am going to teach people who are trying to lose weight how to stop dieting and start drinking ketones for energy and weight loss. The Opportunity Switch Headline. Now that you know the who and what, you need to give the class a sexy title that will attract your dream customers. I try to create a title that focuses on the result this workshop will deliver. I do that by filling in this phrase, how to result they desire most without thing they fear most. So for my ClickFunnels Masterclass, I could create something like this. how to create a seven-figure funnel in less than 30 minutes without having to hire or be held hostage by a tech guy. Or if my niche were flipping houses on eBay, the title of my masterclass would be something like this: How to Make a Quick 10K This Weekend by Flipping Your First House on eBay Without Getting a Loan from a Bank. If I created a niche for helping kids with ADHD, the title could be How to Naturally Destroy Your Kids' ADHD and Help Them Get Better Grades Without Giving Up Their Favorite After-School Snacks. If I were a relationship coach, How to Reconnect with Your Wife and Find the Passion in Your Marriage Without Having to Go Through Painful Counseling or Wasting Time Talking. If I were selling weight loss through ketosis, I'd use something like How to Stop Exercising and Still Lose Weight Through a Little-Known Trick That Almost Instantly Puts Your Body into Ketosis Without Giving Up Your Favorite Carbs. You can plug most Opportunity Switch masterclasses into that framework and create quick titles that people will be interested in. The 5 Curiosity Hooks / Getting Out of the Red Ocean. Okay, you've written down who you're going to serve and what the vehicle is. Next, you need to make that new opportunity as sexy and exciting as possible. You have to figure out the big idea that will draw people to you. Why would they shift from the current vehicle they're in to yours? They will switch if you position your opportunity so people will believe and buy. A while back, one of my friends, Jason Fladlin, author of the book Webinar Pitch Series 2.0, he taught me a concept called the 5 Curiosity Hooks. These are just different ways to present an opportunity. It's possible that all these hooks will work for your masterclass, but you need to pick just one for now that's going to work the best for positioning you and your new opportunity. Here are the 5 hooks. Little known, big differences. Well known, little understood. This changes everything. Crystal ball theory. Revisiting the fundamentals. Let's hear an example where the new niche is weight loss through ketosis to illustrate how you would position it for each of the curiosity hooks. 1. Little known, big differences. This hook shows people something they aren't aware of and how knowing it could make all the difference between success and failure. There's this little known thing called ketosis. Hardly anybody is talking about it. But when you learn it and use it, you'll see a huge difference in your energy levels and how fast you can lose weight. 2. Well-known, little understood. Here is where you take something that everyone thinks they know about and show how they're actually sabotaging their success because they're missing little nuances or details. Everyone's talking about low-carb diets, right? We all know that refined sugar and carbs are bad for us. But what almost no one understands about low-carb diets is the concept of ketosis. It's not restricting carbs that helps you lose weight. It's getting your body into ketosis. And that can happen even if you are eating carbs, as long as you're drinking ketones. 3. This changes everything. With this hook, something new has just happened in your submarket. It's related to the problem your audience wants to solve, and letting them know that if they aren't aware of it, they're at risk of missing out big time. Are you trying to stick to a low-carb diet, but finding the cravings are just too much? Do you start fresh every Monday, fail, then vow to start again with the same old strategy? You need to learn about a new type of ketones that instantly puts your body into ketosis, kills your cravings, and helps you lose weight easily. This changes everything. 4. The crystal ball theory. This angle shows how something that's been done successfully in the past is about to be made obsolete. You're persuading them that soon this will be common knowledge, but they can get in now and have early success. Are you tired of dieting and counting calories, but not seeing the scale budge an ounce? Research is showing that low-carb diets just aren't enough, and staying in a state of ketosis is almost impossible for average people. The diet of the future takes low-carb to the next level. You can drink ketones and instantly put your body into ketosis. 5. Revisiting the fundamentals. This hook takes the approach that things are getting way too complicated, advanced, or sophisticated for the average person. Your new opportunity, on the other hand, takes things back to basics. Do you spend hours logging every morsel you eat, every second of exercise, an ounce of water you drink? Diet trends have really gotten out of control lately. It's time to go back to the basics. With the ketosis diet, you only have to do two things. Drink your ketone drink in the morning and again at night, keep your carbs below 20 grams per day, and you're good to go. Those are the five curiosity hooks. You'll probably notice that each one is speaking against a current red ocean tactic that currently exists in the marketplace. By changing your positioning, you'll pull your opportunity out of a red ocean and plunk it down into a blue ocean. All you need to do is figure out which of the curiosity hooks makes the most sense for you, and that will become the hook for your masterclass. Let's review. Take a few minutes and write down your own statements based on the descriptions. When you're finished, you should have something like this. Who/what statement. I am going to teach people who are trying to lose weight how to stop dieting and start drinking ketones for energy and weight loss. The opportunity switch headline. How to stop exercising and still lose weight through a little-known trick that almost instantly puts your body into ketosis without giving up your favorite carbs. Curiosity hook. There's this little-known thing called ketosis. Hardly anybody is talking about it. But when you learn it and use it, you'll see a huge difference in your energy levels and how fast you can lose weight. Step number 3. Give them what they want. The ask campaign. At this point, it's important to remember that people don't buy what they need. They buy what they want. All too often, we create a new opportunity, giving people exactly what they need, a vehicle that is capable of getting them to their end result. But when they get into the vehicle, they don't see what they actually wanted, like air conditioning, leather seats, radio options, etc. Because of that, they will leave before they ever give you a chance to take them to the result they really desire. So, in addition to providing them with their new opportunity, you also need to find out exactly what they want inside of that vehicle. If you do this correctly, they'll feel like they found their new home. You accomplish this by running a simple one-question survey we call an ask campaign. The ask campaign is based on a simple 3-step formula I learned from two of my earlier mentors, Frank Kern and Ed Dale. This technique is so simple, but don't skip it because of its simplicity. It's one of the most important steps. 1. Find a hot market. 2. Ask them what they want. 3. Give it to them. That's it. Simple, right? Because we're the experts in our respective niches, it's easy to assume we know what people want. And while sometimes we may be right, more often we miss the mark. Probably because we are so close to our own ideas. For example, I own a company called OvercomePornography.com. When we started that company, we assumed that we were mostly selling to men who wanted to overcome their pornography addictions. But after running a simple ask campaign, we discovered that the people who responded were primarily wives and mothers who were looking for help for their spouses or kids. Just imagine how that changed the final product and how we sold it. We used an ask campaign to collect lots of important information from our market, and we used that information to create a product people really wanted. Let me explain how this works. First, you create a very simple page that says, "What's your number one question about blank?" On the same page, I offer people a ticket to the beta group of my masterclass for free if they'll tell me their number one question about my topic. The page reads, "Dear friend, I know your time is valuable, so I'll get right to the point. I need your advice. I'm putting finishing touches on a new course called How to Blank Without Blank. I want to make sure I don't leave anything out, so will you let me know your biggest question about how to blank? It could be anything. You may think it's silly. All you have to do is type your questions in the box below and click submit. In exchange for your advice, I'll give you free access to my masterclass that's happening on date. This course will sell for $197 in the near future, but you'll get special access to experience the course free when you let me know your number one question. Okay, here's the easy form. Getting your first 100 responses. Once you have the web page set up, we have a template in ClickFunnels to make it super easy for you, it's time to start promoting it. Start by telling everyone you know. It sounds strange, but that's where I start every time I'm creating a brand new niche. I post it on Facebook, I text my friends and family members. I try to get everyone I know to come to my very first masterclass. That's the low-hanging fruit. Next, I start to look at the submarket that I've built my new opportunity in, and I look for people who are already in those submarkets. When I got started over 10 years ago, I used to look for forums full of people in my submarkets. So if my new niche was about flipping houses on eBay, then I'd look for forums about real estate investing. I would become part of those communities and start participating in the groups. Notice I didn't say post spam messages about the masterclass. You need to give before you can take. So I go in and answer questions for a week or two. People see that I'm there to add to the community. And then, after I've become a familiar face who provides lots of value, it's usually okay to invite those people to answer my survey and take the masterclass for free. I don't use forums as much these days because most of that communication is happening in groups inside of Facebook. In the future, there may be a different platform where people gather in groups, but regardless, the concept is the same. If you're looking for people on Facebook, search for groups in your submarket and join the active groups. Then become an active participant in those communities and provide value. Then, when it's appropriate, ask people, what's your number one question about blank? And post a link to your survey. Of course, you can always run paid ads directing people to the survey as well. If you're in a hurry, some Facebook or Google ads can get you answers in a hurry. But if you'd prefer not to spend money at this stage, social media groups work well. Using the survey data. Run traffic to the Ask campaign page until you have about 100 responses. Out of those 100, you're going to find 8 to 10 core questions people are asking over and over. Those questions will become the titles of the modules in your masterclass. For example, when we ran the Ask campaign for my How to Make a Potato Gun product, people asked things like, what type of pipe did you use? Do the PSI ratings on the pipes matter? What type of igniter should I use? Barbecue or lantern? How long should I cut my pipes? What type of propellants should I use? Am I going to die if I make the gun wrong? Next, I found the most common 6 to 8 questions people were asking and created an outline. Module number 1. How to decide which type of gun you want to create. What's a pneumatic gun? What size gun should we build? How do you build a bolt-action spud gun? Module number 2. How to pick the right pipes. What type of pipe do you use? Do the PSI ratings on the pipes matter? Module number 3. How to find accessories before you start building. What type of igniter should I use? Barbecue lighter or lantern igniter? Module number 4. How to cut the right barrel to chamber volume ratio. How long should I cut my pipes? What happens if my chamber is too big or too small? Module number 5. How to assemble the pieces. How do I assemble the gun? What tools do I need to make my spud gun? Module number 6. How to increase potato flight distance. What type of propellants should I use? What if my gun won't shoot? Module number 7. How to stay safe while shooting your potato gun. Am I going to die if I make the gun wrong? Has anyone ever died from a potato gun? After you have the questions and the outline, there's one more step that gives you a really cool asset to use when you start selling your masterclass in the future. People have just told us exactly what they want to know, right? So take all the questions and rewrite them as bullet points to use in sales letters, ads, emails, webinars, and lots of other places. Question. What type of pipe do you use? Do the PSI ratings on the pipes matter? Bullet. Discover the only pipe we will ever use and the secret PSI rating that will guarantee your potatoes go farther and your gun lasts longer. Question. What type of igniter should I use? Barbecue or lantern? Bullet. Find out which igniter we'll never use and hear about a scary near-death experience that kept us from ever using it again and why there is only one brand we trust. Question. How long should I cut my pipes? Bullet. You'll learn the correct barrel-to-chamber ratio that will keep you safe and help your gun shoot 25% farther. Warning. Even being a quarter inch off could make every potato you shoot a flop. Question. What type of propellant should I use? Bullet. Discover the secret propellant we accidentally stumbled upon when we ran out of hairspray that immediately made our gun shoot over 50 yards farther every time. Question. Am I going to die if I make the gun wrong? Bullet. Learn the safety secrets we use to make sure every potato gun outing is safe as well as exciting. Rewriting all the questions into bullet points will help make what you teach so much more exciting to your students, and it will make writing your marketing materials easier later on. At this point, you have an outline, which is really a table of contents. You could write a book from here if you wanted to. All you have to do to deliver an amazing masterclass is find the answers to their questions and teach them in a way that will facilitate the best results. The participants will be happy because you're answering their questions. You're giving them exactly what they want. Step number 4. Deliver your free masterclass. To make running your first masterclass simple, you really only need 2 tools, a Facebook group and Facebook Live, both free. Set up a private Facebook group so your beta members can interact with each other. A group allows you to post content, give class updates, provide accountability, and deliver any bonuses. Later on, you can make a membership site and get a little fancier, but for now, you're just looking at getting some results for a group of people with your new opportunity. Next, you need some technology to help you deliver the masterclass. Recently, we started using Facebook Live inside our member group to deliver the live training. It works really well, especially if you're starting on a budget. There are other webinar platforms you can use as well. Platforms come and go, but my favorites right now are GoToWebinar.com or Zoom.us for webinars, or www.InstantTeleseminar.com for audio teleseminars. You'll also need to let people know how to access the class. When is it being held? Where do they log in? What materials might they need to bring? You can give them the information inside your private Facebook group. As for teaching the actual class, everyone has a different teaching style. You might decide to use PowerPoint slides and a webinar format, or you might just want to talk on the phone with a teleseminar format. And while I don't think it matters what format you actually teach it in, I do highly recommend using the storytelling skills that you'll be learning in Section 2 of this book to get people to listen and make lasting changes. So, now that you have your vehicle for change in a newly created blue ocean niche and a beta group of members you can start getting results for, you may be thinking, but Russell, when do I start making money? We're going to start addressing that in the next section. After you've completed your masterclass, you will have some great results that prove what you can do for people. That's the goal from this first section. The results you get from this beta group will become the fuel that grows your expert business. Section 2. Creating Belief. The first section of this book was all about understanding who you must become and what you must create to start building your mass movement. In this section, we shift focus to how you create certain beliefs in the minds of your followers. These beliefs allow them to be more receptive to the opportunities you're offering. When people have absolute belief in what you are telling them, you can positively influence them. The longer I work in this business, the more I realize how everything comes down to one thing. Belief. Belief creates the customer. Belief creates the results. You must persuade people to believe in what you are doing, and you do that by mastering the art of storytelling. Secrets number 5 through number 10 will give you the foundation you need to tell stories that make your audience believe. Secret number 5. The Big Domino. I was sitting in a room with about 120 other successful entrepreneurs, all of whom made at least $1 million a year, a requirement to be in that room. One of the featured keynote speakers was Tim Ferriss, the author of The 4-Hour Workweek. After his presentation, he opened up the floor for questions. A woman stood up and asked, "Hey Tim, you seem to get so much done. What is it that you do all day?" He paused for a moment, then gave an awkward half-smile and said, "If you watched my daily routine, you'd be bored out of your mind. Most people wake up every morning with a task list of 1,000 things to do. They go through the day trying to knock down all these things. I wake up every morning and I meditate. I drink tea or coffee. I go for a walk and maybe I read a book." He said he might spend 3 or 4 weeks doing that and nothing else. "My whole goal is to slow down and look around. Instead of looking for all the tasks that I could do, I try to identify the one big domino, the one thing that if I could knock that down, all the other dominoes would either fall down or become irrelevant." When he said that, I had an aha moment. I haven't yet figured out how to implement this in my personal life, but when it comes to how I sell things, he was 100% right. The first step to creating belief is figuring out the one thing you have to get someone to believe that will knock down all their other objections, make them irrelevant, or disappear altogether. A little while later, I was talking to a friend and mentor, Perry Belcher. He told me how he had gone back and analyzed all the different offers that his companies had created and sold over the past 10 years. He discovered that the more things they asked someone to believe in their sales pitch, the worse the offer converted. In fact, he figured out that if they tried to make more than one point or ask someone to focus on more than one thing in a sales message, conversion rates dropped by half. He then said, "Look at how many things a prospect has to believe in order to buy what you're selling. If it's more than one, you need to rework your sales presentation." After hearing that, I knew we had to go back and look at everything we were selling. We asked ourselves, what's the one thing? What is the one big domino of belief that we need to knock down? Every product has one big domino, one thing that will knock down all the smaller objections and resistance. If we can get people to believe in that one thing, then they will have to buy it. I took a logic class in college that showed different ways to create valid arguments. One of the many valid argument forms is called modus ponens. It works like this. If A, then B. A. Therefore, B. If I were to put this argument into a sentence, I'd say something like this. If Dallin doesn't finish his homework, then he will not go to class. Dallin did not finish his homework. Therefore, Dallin will not go to class. If you think about it, you'll start to see patterns of this argument everywhere. Religion is an easy example. In Christianity, everything hinges upon the truth of the Bible. If someone believes the Bible is true, then they have no other option than to believe that Jesus Christ is the Savior. If he is truly the Savior, then all the other concerns you have about Christianity disappear. If the Bible is true, then Jesus is the Savior. The Bible is true, therefore, Jesus is the Savior. As a Christian, if I can get someone to believe the Bible, their one big domino, then it knocks down every other domino and makes any other argument irrelevant to the person who has that belief. But it's not just in religion. We see this happening everywhere around us, from politics to sports to the people we spend time with. That's why it's hard to have an argument with someone about something they truly believe in. When that seed of belief is there, it doesn't matter how much you try to convince them otherwise. It has already knocked down all the other smaller dominoes that you're trying to stack back up. The one thing, aka the big domino statement. When we launched ClickFunnels, I tried to figure out the one key belief that I needed my audience to understand and believe. I came up with this basic statement. If I can make people believe that my new opportunity is key to what they desire most and is only attainable through my specific vehicle, then all other objections and concerns become irrelevant and they have to give me money. If I can get someone to truly believe that the new opportunity is the key to what they want the most and they can only get it through my vehicle, then they have no other options but to buy. This is the key to launching your movement. Belief. Here's what I used for ClickFunnels. If I can make people believe that funnels are the key to online business success and are only attainable through ClickFunnels, then all other objections and concerns become irrelevant and they have to give me money. When someone believes they have to have a funnel, and they do, and that I'm the only way they can get one, then they have to buy ClickFunnels. There is no other option. I've helped my inner circle members create these statements for their businesses. We discovered that if we're struggling to make a valid argument that works, it's typically because we didn't create a new opportunity, but instead have an improvement offer. If we haven't created a blue ocean, then the argument won't be valid. For example, I've seen statements that say something like, if I can make people believe that cutting calories and exercising is the key to losing weight and is only attainable through my new weight loss course, then all other objections and concerns become irrelevant and they have to give me money. That statement is not true. If the belief you are trying to give them is that they need to cut calories and exercise, there are a few problems. One, you are not in the prolific zone. You are in the mainstream. Two, this is not a new opportunity. There are thousands of identical programs crowding the niche of cutting calories and exercising. Three, this is not a blue ocean. They could literally buy one of 100 different products to satisfy the belief you created. I would need to change my niche and my opportunity to be something like this. If I can make them believe that getting their bodies into a state of ketosis is key to losing weight and is only attainable through drinking Pruvit's ketones, which put the body into ketosis within 10 minutes, then all other objections and concerns become irrelevant and they have to give me money. The first step is creating your big domino statement. Once you have a statement that works and is true, the next step is to create real belief in your one thing. Secret number 6. The Epiphany Bridge. A few years ago, I helped a friend who was launching a new company. One of the guys working on the project wrote a script for a front-end sales video. The goal was to sell people into their new opportunity. After reading the script, I knew he'd made a huge mistake. He was trying to sell people on why they should join this new opportunity. Here's the email I sent him. What I've found is that if you just sell something, it's not as strong and doesn't create the emotion you need to really cause action. If you want people to adopt a new concept and want to get their buy-in, you have to lead them to the answer, but you can't give it to them. They have to come up with the idea themselves. You plant the idea in their minds with a story, and if they come up with the answer, they will have sold themselves. The buying decision becomes theirs, not yours. When that happens, you don't have to sell them anything. He wrote back, a little confused, and told me that my idea sounded like it came from the movie Inception, and asked me to take a shot at writing the sales script. I spent the next few hours writing an Epiphany Bridge script, which later helped that company acquire 1.5 million users in just 3 short months. That is the power of a story when you use it the right way. So, what is an Epiphany Bridge? It's simply a story that takes people through the emotional experience that got you excited about the new opportunity you're presenting to them. There's a reason you got excited about your new opportunity, right? Something happened to you at some point in your life. You had an amazing experience that caused an epiphany. You thought, wow, this is so cool. The first time I learned how to sell things online, I had an epiphany. The first time I learned about funnels, I had an epiphany. We're having these little aha moments all the time. The first time you discovered your expert topic, something happened that excited you. You had an emotional response that sold you on this new opportunity. Do you remember what the experience was? Do you remember how you felt? That first aha moment created so much excitement for you that you started on a journey where you studied everything that you could find about the topic. You started geeking out and going deep into the subject, learning all the terminology and understanding the science and technical aspects behind why it worked. And then you became logically sold on the new opportunity. Now, at this point, you've had an emotional connection with the new opportunity, as well as a logical connection. Then, because you believe so much in what you're learning, you have a desire to share it with other people. But, unfortunately for you, the first thing you try to do is logically convince everyone you know about this new idea. You probably expected them to be as excited as you were, but quickly found out that they were resistant to the new ideas. Has this ever happened to you? The problem is that you started to speak a language we call technobabble. One of my friends, Kim Claver, wrote a book called If My Product's So Great, How Come I Can't Sell It? In it, she identifies technobabble as the number one sales killer. We all love our ideas so much. We want people to understand why they should follow us and use our products and services. But for some reason, as soon as we try to explain our beliefs to someone, we automatically start to spew the technobabble we've learned in order to logically convince people to buy. We talk about why this concept is the best and potentially mention all the science behind what we do. We talk about how we're leading the industry with groundbreaking products. We share industry numbers and jargon. But all the logical stuff that strengthened our own beliefs in the new opportunity will not help people buy unless they've already had the same initial emotional epiphany that you had. All the logic, features, and benefits you give people before the epiphany will just annoy them. It's frustrating and often completely offensive. There's a time and a place for logic, but you have to convince them emotionally first before they'll be excited by your logic. Think about it. You didn't buy into the new opportunity because of all the logical technobabble. You bought in because of some emotional experience that happened before you geeked out. You had an epiphany first, and that caused you to move forward. People don't buy logically. They buy based on emotion. Then they use logic to justify the purchase decision they've already made. For example, let's say I purchased a Ferrari. I am emotionally invested in the feeling I want to have when I'm driving it. That's why I bought the Ferrari. Or a big house, expensive clothes, watches, etc. But then I have to logically justify to myself, my friends, or my spouse why it was worth spending all that money. I have to explain how it gets better gas mileage. It was on sale. It came with a great warranty. Logic is justification for the emotional attachment I've already made. If you think about it, there's a status consideration on both sides of this equation. I'm emotionally attached to the status that the new Ferrari will give me, but then I need to justify it logically to my friends and family so I don't lose status in their minds. But good luck selling me logically if I don't already have the emotional connection with that car. It's pretty much impossible. Logic doesn't sell. Emotions sell. So to create those emotions, you have to go back and remember what it was that gave you the epiphany that caused you to believe in the new opportunity. That story, your epiphany bridge story, provides the emotional connection and bridges the gap from the emotional to the logical side. If you can tell a story about how you got your big aha, and if you structure the story right, they will have the same epiphany and will sell themselves on your product or service. Then, they'll look for ways to logically justify the purchase and learn all the technobabble on their own. Your job is to learn how to tell these stories in a way that will lead people to the epiphany, and they will do the rest. So, my first question for you is, what was your core epiphany bridge story that convinced you of the one thing you are sharing with others? We'll worry about how to structure that story over the next two secrets, but for now, I want you to think back to the original experience that gave you your first epiphany, that brought you on this journey? Do you remember what happened? What was happening around you? How did you feel? It's important to remember those details because they are the key to telling a good story. Effective storytelling. Have you ever noticed that two people can tell the same story with completely different outcomes? In one, you're emotionally captivated and engaged. Then someone else tells you a story about the exact same experience and you fall asleep. What's the difference? What makes some people better storytellers than others? There are lots of reasons, but you don't have to know them all to tell a great story that gets prospects to buy. It only takes a couple of things to really make a captivating and interesting story. The first key to telling captivating stories is oversimplification. When you're telling stories, you need to speak at about a third grade level. Many of you will struggle with this because you like to use big words and show off your vocabulary and try to sound sophisticated and smart. There may be a time and a place for that, but it's not when you're telling stories. People are used to digesting information at about a third grade level. When you go above that, you start losing people quickly. There's a reason the news stations speak to their audiences at this level. During the 2016 primary elections, a study looked at the speeches of the Republican candidates and ran them through the Flesch-Kincaid test that shows the grade level of their speech. Trump averaged a third to fourth grade level on each of his speeches, where other candidates like Ted Cruz had a ninth grade level, and both Ben Carson and Mike Huckabee were at an eighth grade level. Using big words may make you feel smarter, but it will not influence others. But sometimes you have to talk about complex ideas. So, how do you take a complicated idea and simplify it quickly? You do this using a tool I created called a kinda-like bridge. Every time I run into a word or a concept that is past a third grade level, I stop and think about how I can relate that concept to something they already know and understand. The same way I would try to explain complex ideas to my kids. For example, in one of my sales scripts, I was trying to teach a process called ketosis, which is a way to lose weight. That sentence right there was a mini kinda-like bridge. Did you notice that? In the sales script, I mentioned the word ketones, and I watched as the audience zoned out. I discovered that if they don't know what a word means, they stop paying attention to everything you say afterward. So I started using a kinda-like bridge, like this. The goal is to get ketones into your body. Now, what are ketones? Well, they're kinda like millions of little motivational speakers running through your body that give you energy and make you feel awesome. I take this new concept or word that people may not understand and add the phrase, "it's kinda like," to the sentence. I'm connecting the new word or concept to something they already understand. Something that makes total sense to them, so they get it. My audience knows what a motivational speaker is, and they can imagine what it might feel like to have millions of little ones running around in their bodies. In that same script, I was trying to explain what it feels like to be in ketosis, and that's a hard thing to understand. It feels good. It feels awesome. So I had to take this concept and say, when you're in ketosis, it's kinda like the old video game Pac-Man. Remember? You spent the whole game running away from the ghosts, but every once in a while, you get a power pellet, and suddenly you get tons of energy, and then you're actually chasing the ghosts, and you feel on. That's what it feels like to be in ketosis. Again, I'm taking this concept that's vague and hard to understand, and bridging it with something they do understand, using the phrase, kinda like. Anytime you're speaking or writing, and you hit a friction point where some people may not understand what you're trying to convey, just say, it's kinda like, and relate it to something easy to understand. This keeps your stories simple, entertaining, and effective. Oversimplification is the key. How does it feel? The next way to improve your storytelling is to add in feelings and emotions. In film, it's often a lot easier to get people to feel something. One of my favorite examples of this is from the movie X-Men: First Class. In this movie, we are taken back into the X-Men's past and given a glimpse of what it was like for them growing up and discovering their powers. There was a scene where young Magneto was taken to a Nazi concentration camp, and as they pulled him and his family into the gates, they noticed the metal fences around their compound started to move as he started to resist them. They wanted to see what his powers were, so they brought him into a very small room with a Nazi leader who wanted a demonstration of his powers. They also brought Magneto's mother into the room, so they could use her as leverage to get him to do what they wanted. The leader points a gun at Magneto's mother and has him try to move a metal coin on the desk. He nervously tries to move the coin, but isn't able, so the leader pulls the trigger and kills his mother. And then you see a scene so powerful that, without a single word being said, you actually feel the pain that Magneto is going through. You watch as his eyes shift from sadness to anger. He then uses his powers to crush a bell on the Nazi leader's desk. From there, he starts yelling and moving everything metal inside the room. He crushes the guards' helmets, instantly killing them, and then completely destroys everything in the room. And that's when he found his power. When you're watching the film, you are able to see all of this happen without any words, because we can see his face, we can experience the room, we hear the music, and we actually feel, in some way, Magneto's pain and suffering. That is the power of films. Now, most of us aren't producing films to sell our stuff, but we have to learn how to tell stories in a way that help others feel the same. Imagine if Magneto just came in and said something like, "Yeah, so when I was a kid, I was in a Nazi concentration camp, and they wanted me to move a metal coin, but I wasn't able to, so they killed my mom. I was really mad, so I blew the whole place up." Did you feel anything there? No, you wouldn't have had the same emotional experience that you need to connect with that character. Yet, that's how most people tell their stories. If you look at a good fiction author, they'll have the character come into a room, then spend several pages describing the room. They talk about the lights, how things looked and felt, and everything they need to set up the scene. Then they go deep into how the character is feeling. And that is the key. You have to explain how you feel, and when you do that, people will start to feel what you were feeling. For example, what if I tell a story like this? I was sitting at home, and I could hear my wife and kids in the other room playing. They had no idea what had just happened. I was sitting there freaked out because I knew the bills were due, but had no idea how I was going to pay them. I started to get a shooting pain in my stomach. It felt like a heart attack, but it was lower in my gut. I felt this pressure coming down, and I literally felt like someone was sitting on my neck. It got so heavy that I couldn't lift my head. The only thing I could see were the palms of my hands, and they were sweating. Yet I was freezing cold. My whole body was shaking and shivering because I was in so much pain and frustration, yet I was frozen with fear. As you listen to that story, you probably started to actually feel the things I explained. How many of you felt a pain in your gut, or a weight on your neck, or sweaty palms? By explaining how I felt, you almost instantly will feel something similar. When I tell a story this way, I am controlling the state of the person listening. It's essential that I control their state, and I do this by telling the story in a way that gets you to feel what I felt. So when I explain how I had my epiphany, you can experience the same epiphany. If I want you to have the same epiphany I had, you need to be in the same state that I was in when I had that epiphany. Have you ever had the experience where you told someone a story about a situation that was really funny or exciting, and after you told it to them, they didn't quite get it? They understood, but they didn't get what you were trying to share with them. So you try to tell the story again, another way, and then again another way, and after a few attempts, you throw up your hands in defeat and say something like, "Well, I guess you had to be there." That's what happens when you don't get people into the same state that you were in when you had that epiphany. Now that you understand the basics of an epiphany bridge, how to simplify your stories, and how to get people to feel things when you tell your stories, I want to transition into story structure. When you learn the right structure for telling your stories, and you apply the concepts you learned here, you will become a master at storytelling and story selling. Secret number 7. The Hero's Two Journeys. For the past 10 years, I focused on story selling to get people excited about the new opportunities I offer them. I didn't really have much structure. I just told a lot of stories and noticed that some of them encouraged my audience to believe and follow me, while others didn't have much impact at all. Over time, I became better and better at telling stories. But it wasn't until I met a guy named Michael Haig that I really started to understand story structure. Once I understood structure, I was able to craft stories so they always created the right environments for people to have the necessary epiphanies. One of my friends, Dagan Smith, started me on the path to creating or changing beliefs with stories. He told me to listen to an audiobook by Michael Haig and Christopher Vogler called The Hero's Two Journeys. Michael has been one of Hollywood's top script consultants and story experts for more than 30 years. He's the guy that top screenwriters and directors call to make sure that their movies are following correct story structure for maximum emotional impact. Shortly after I listened to the book, Dagan and I hired Michael to speak at one of our events, showing us how to use stories to create belief in the minds of our customers. What he taught was fascinating and helped me become a better storyteller. This journey has been a huge focus for me over the past 5 years. I want to walk you through what I learned from The Hero's Two Journeys. It will give you context for what a good story needs to be, and will help you craft your Epiphany Bridge stories. Good stories are really simple. There can be layers of complexity, but at the core, they are all very simple. Depending on the complexities I share, I can tell the same story in 60 seconds or 60 minutes, all with the same desired effect. Every good story is built on three foundational elements: character, desire, and conflict, also known as the plot. Once upon a time, there was a girl named Red Riding Hood. She wanted to take a basket of cookies to her grandma, who lived in the woods. What she didn't know was that the big bad wolf was waiting to gobble her up. Character: Red Riding Hood. Desire: take a basket of cookies to her grandma. Conflict: big bad wolf. These are the basic elements of every movie, book, play, TV show, opera, any type of story. After showing me this, Michael explained, every good story is about a captivating character who is pursuing some compelling desire and who faces seemingly insurmountable obstacles to achieving it. That's it. If you've got those three things, then you've got a good story. Your plot statement. The first Epiphany Bridge story you will tell is the one that got you excited about your new opportunity in the first place. Take a few minutes to think about your story. You are the character, so that step is easy. But what desire started you on your journey? What did you want to achieve? Write it down. Next, what was the conflict you experienced along the way? Write it down. Boom, you've got a plot. Now write out your basic plot in one sentence, like I did for Little Red Riding Hood. Here's an example. Once upon a time, there was a guy named Russell Brunson, who wanted to figure out a way to support his new family without having to get a traditional job. So he started selling information products, potato gun DVDs, online. But one day, Google's ad costs tripled, and his little business dried up overnight. Character: Russell Brunson. Desire: support his new family. Conflict: Google's ad costs tripled and his business dried up overnight. That is the basic structure of every story. When I'm first building out my inventory of stories, which you will do in secret number 9, I always start with a plot statement. This allows me to tell the entire story in just a few seconds if I need to. Or I can fill in the details and talk for hours. Now that you have the basic plot written out, let's dig deeper into each element so you have the tools you need to flesh out your stories and really hook into people's emotions. 1. Build rapport with the hero. The first 10% of any movie is all about building rapport with the hero, so we have a vested interest in their journey. If we don't build rapport with the hero in the story, then no one cares what else happens to them on their journey. If you do a good job of building that rapport up front, the audience will be engaged throughout the whole thing. You want people to get into a rapport with the hero quickly. The fastest way to do that is to connect with two or more of these core identities. Make the character a victim of some outside force, so we want to root for them. Put the character in jeopardy, so we worry about them. Make the character likable, so we want to be with them. Make the character funny, so we connect with them. Make the character powerful, so we want to be like them. After you've introduced the identities, it's time to introduce the character flaws that have caused you, as the hero, to struggle. Sharing flaws is critical to getting rapport. No one cares about Superman until we introduce Kryptonite. He's an uninteresting character until he has flaws and weaknesses, and the same is true of any hero. Sometimes it's scary to share these flaws in your stories, but they are the key to building rapport. 2. Introduce the desire for something more. Every story is about a journey, either toward pleasure or away from pain. The hero must have suffered some type of wound or carry an unhealed source of continuous pain in the backstory. Because the wound has never healed, it causes the fear and pain that drive the character. Usually, the hero desires to accomplish something they believe will heal that wound. There are four core desires that drive most heroes. Two of them move the hero toward pleasure, and two move away from pain. Toward pleasure. To win. The hero may be trying to win the heart of someone they love, or they may want to win fame, money, a competition, or prestige. But as you now know, they are really looking for an increase in status. To retrieve. The hero wants to obtain something and bring it back. Away from pain. To escape. The hero desires to get away from something that's upsetting or causing pain. To stop. The hero wants to stop some bad thing from happening. The story describes the journey to achieving the desire, but in all good stories, the hero is actually on two journeys. The one that everyone sees, the journey of achievement, and one that's hidden, the journey of transformation. The second journey may not be as obvious, yet it's the key to the whole story. The journey of achievement. This is the first journey, the one that everyone listening to the story is aware of. There's a visible goal with a finish line that everyone can see. It's the reason the hero sets out on the journey in the first place. The audience is rooting for the hero to accomplish this journey. While this journey is what drives the story forward, it's the second journey that actually matters the most. In fact, in many stories, the hero never actually achieves his end desire. Or if he does, he gives it up for the real transformational journey that he's been on throughout the story. The journey of transformation. During the first 10% of the story, we learn about the character and the beliefs they have that make up their identity. A particular identity is very important to the hero at the beginning of the story, but along the way, they become someone else, someone better. It's almost like the death of their old belief systems and the resurrection or rebirth of a new person. This transformation is the real journey that our hero has actually been on. One of my favorite stories that shows this transformation of a character is from the animated movie Cars. Lightning McQueen has a very real goal he wants to achieve, to win the Piston Cup. The whole movie is centered around him getting to California so he can win. He stumbles upon conflict along the way, but eventually he gets to the big race. In the last scene, he's racing and about to finally achieve all his desires, but then the car he's racing against, the King, gets into a huge wreck. McQueen's win is guaranteed, but because he's been on a journey of transformation, he chooses to slam on his brakes just inches before the finish line and watches as Chick Hicks races past him for the win. He then backs up, drives over to the King, and pushes him across the finish line. The King then says, "You just gave up the Piston Cup." To which McQueen responds, "A grumpy old racing car once told me something. It's just an empty cup." Through this journey, he has been doing everything possible to achieve his greatest desires, and then at the last minute, he gives them up to become something more. We see the death and rebirth of his identity. We see the new beliefs he has created. We see his essence. That is the key to a great story. 3. Introduce the conflict. Desire is essential to the story because it shows the end goal. It provides a reason for the journey to move forward. But emotion doesn't come from the desire. It comes from the conflict the hero faces while trying to gain the desire.